Hey, what are you doing? You doing anything? You got a little time for me? You got a little time? Just slow down, sit down in a chair, and like some type of performing a circus act, I shall entertain you, inform you, and make you a better person. Maybe. Or not.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I used to like that sort of thing, then I got tired.
Whatever.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show, he said with some type of excitement in his voice.
Relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Good, fine. I can't hear you. Don't respond. That's kind of moronic. Just sit there and be quiet. I will take care of things from here. I shall drive this particular ship. You just go play shuffleboard and eat from the buffet, and I'll take care of everything else. I am your captain. Don't trust me. Don't trust me to be your captain. I swear. I'm going to try to get through the entire show without mentioning Donald Trump, because I don't care on this program to discuss the Antichrist to any great extent. Look, I don't want to make this a religious program, although at times it should be. But I'm looking for a sign. I haven't read all of the Bible. From beginning to end, because I'm waiting for to come out on tape and CD, which I think it has, but I don't have it. And I believe that there's supposed to be, from what I understand, I believe there's supposed to be a second coming. And I interpret that to mean that some great leader, whether it be religious or otherwise, some influential entity shall appear on the earth, bring us all together, and everything will be wonderful. It will be very, harps will start playing. It'll just be, everybody's going to eat lobster. You don't care for lobster? Okay, wrong example then. Everybody will eat what they want to eat. How about that? All chickens will be free range. Good things are going to happen, even for chickens. But I've kind of like, I've waited too long. When Donald Trump decided to run for president, I said to myself, oh my God, things are going to get ugly. And they did. And then when Hillary Clinton ran for president as well, I thought, oh my God, things are going to get ugly. And it did. Nobody knew who to vote for because there were no choices. It was like going to dinner and the only two things on the menu were liver and Brussels sprouts. Again, maybe some people like liver and Brussels sprouts. I guess I choose the Brussels sprouts over the liver. I can't eat somebody's organ. By the way, my mother, when I was young, she actually, once a week, I don't know why she did this, she would go to the butcher or the supermarket, whatever, and buy an entire cow's tongue, an actual tongue. This is something that you ate. And she would take the tongue, put it in the oven at 350 degrees, and bake it until it was not edible, as if it was edible even before that. And I believe the word is inedible. I'm not sure. Then she'd take it out of the oven, and it would have the consistency of a cow's tongue. It had little. It was porous, just like your tongue. And she'd serve it with mustard. And my brother and I would look at this cow's tongue on our plate with some Brussels sprouts, and we'd say to ourselves, she's trying to kill us. And when she wasn't serving cow's tongue, she would actually get a slab of liver from the supermarket, put it in the oven at 350 degrees, and bake that until it was unrecognizable by law. And she would serve that on a plate with nothing. It would just be a dried piece of leather is what it was. And we were supposed to eat this liver. And my brother and I would look at each other and say, she's definitely trying to kill us. My mother was obsessed with cooking organ meat at 350 degrees until it was unrecognizable. This is what I grew up with, ladies and gentlemen. As a result, I love to cook. Because I got to make up for what my mother did to me. She just couldn't cook. If it wasn't in a cookbook, it couldn't be. It couldn't be. It just wasn't possible. She couldn't make it. It was just awful. And we ate a lot of TV dinners. You know what they are, kids? TV dinners. Swanson was the big maker of this TV dinner, and it would have little compartments in it. And in the main compartment, it was made of like aluminum foil. It was an aluminum foil tray, and you bought it and you put it into the oven at 350 degrees again. I don't think our oven had to change temperatures because everything was at 350. And you would bake this until it was unrecognizable. And then you'd take it out of the oven and you'd take the foil off and you'd eat what's in the tray. And I think she was preparing us for someday if we had to go to prison, this is the way they eat. Just in case, never went to prison, but just in case, now I'm all set. In the main compartment, it was either fried chicken, which wasn't all that bad, really. I mean, it was okay. Or a thing called Salisbury steak, which is a trumped up, and excuse the expression, a trumped up hamburger. Or it was meatloaf. Or sometimes it would be turkey with a little stuffing. And all of this was edible if you like 7,000 milligrams of sodium added to your food. The upper left-hand corner was a green vegetable, usually peas, almost always peas as a matter of fact, and all the way to the right, the upper right-hand, which was a smaller compartment, was always mashed potatoes, which again, were not so bad. In the middle, tiny compartment, in the center, the upper center of the tray, was what they called dessert. And this was always some type of hot apple thing. I called it the lava cake of death, because when this thing came out of the oven, it would stay lava hot for 7 years. If you tried to eat it before the 7 years was up, you'd have no tongue left. Thus, I guess, why my mother served tongue so much. It wasn't so bad, and it was called TV dinner, so we got away with eating it while we were watching TV. The whole thing was not a bad deal. I don't think they have these things anymore. Maybe they do. I really don't know because I don't eat like that anymore, but that was my childhood. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I was talking about Trump. And then I was talking about the second coming, and then I started talking about my mother's cooking. This is all screwed up, man. This is all screwed up. There's almost no point to this, is there? I don't even know where I was or where I'm going with it. So let's get out of here.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
I think my original point was that I'm waiting for some knight in shining armor to rescue us, to go down a path of better humanity. It's kind of the fault of the political parties for not giving us a choice. But it's also the fault of the American people for nobody stepping up and saying, I don't care about the power. I just kind of want to make everybody like have a long, healthy, peaceful life. And I'll do everything I can to make it so, which means I want to make sure everybody has some health care, has some jobs, you know, doesn't have to struggle like incredibly, and that the world will kind of come our way and the whole world will get along and we'll hold hands and we'll share a hamburger together, you know, some kind of person who just like would paint the picture so rosy that we would just be, our eyes would open and all our eyes would turn blue, you know, it would just be, we'd all be like just so happy and wonderful and we'd just be great. And we'd all hug each other across the world and, you know, make paper flowers and things like that. Because the perfect opportunity was then, and maybe during the next election, where somebody who's in the middle, who brings the Republicans, those assholes, and the Democrats, those assholes, and bring them together in the middle and just get the best from that side and the best from that side and have the ability to put the two of them together and take the best of both sides, put them together into one and make one incredible dish. It's like cooking. It is like cooking. It's just like cooking. You get all the tastiest stuff, all the tastiest vegetables on this side. You get all the tastiest sauces and foods from this side, and you put them together, and it's a meal that you're in heaven when you eat this food. That's what the political system should be. Bring in the best from both sides and making it better than it ever was. You don't have to break America down in order to make it great. This country was already great. Trump tried to tear it down to make you feel like you were worthless, you were hopeless, you'll never get what you want, things are horrible, your legs are falling off, your teeth are rotting out of your head, you may not live tomorrow, load your gun, someone's going to kill you in 10 minutes. I mean, just made you feel like awful, like everybody is out to get you, everybody's doing everything fake, everybody's doing everything horrible. And we fell for it because we were just so damn confused. But the opportunity for someone to step forward and say, I am goodness. I am hope. I am the future. I will make things from everybody. I will take your best qualities and your best qualities and we'll put them together and great things are going to happen. Because it's not about making America great, Mr. Trump. It's about making America greater. That would have been my campaign slogan. But who steps forward out of all this? What is it, 300 million people in this country? 300 million plus. Now with the refugees. Not one person out of 300 million was able to step forward and say, I'm in the middle. I'll do it. I won't do it out of power. I won't do it out of greed. I'll do it because I think we can all do this together. Somebody who has a nice face, an angelic face, male, female, black, white, Chinese, doesn't matter who, doesn't matter. Just somebody who we can all connect with. Now, of course, not everybody would go along with this, but we need that second coming person. That person to come down from the heavens and say, I got it. And I didn't come down from another planet. I am not God's gift to you. I don't know everything, but I'll surround myself with people that care and that do. And as a team, from both sides of the aisle, we will advance like we've never advanced before. Because really, in the past number of years, the past few decades, we've kind of gone backwards. It looked like humanity was getting better. No, it wasn't getting better. We were just hiding it better. We were hiding our misgivings and our racism and our treatment of what we were, just making it look like we were doing well, but we kind of weren't. So we need that person to step in the middle and say, this is all crazy now, man. This is all out of hand. Nobody feels stable. Let's get this stability back going here. Let's start doing smart things by listening to everybody. Well, that went a little deeper than I had liked it to, but it's out of frustration, and I don't understand in a country this large how not one person can represent us all at this point. It can be done. I would do it. It's just that I'm really busy doing this show. I'm not really the second coming. I'm like the fifth one. There's more in front of me. Hey, I do a new show every single weekday. Did you know that? I guess so. Weekdays would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and now Friday. So, yeah. You know where to find us, don't you? Well, you're listening to this. I guess you know where to find us. We can also be found on... NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, Podbean Network, find us on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and various other communication outlets, as well as some syndicated radio stations across the country. That's nice. I'd like to thank you for your many emails to ronvandamshow@gmail.com. That's ronvandamshow@gmail.com. Thank you for your emails. I don't read them. I just know you send them, but I don't read them. What would be the point? Then I'd have to respond to them, and I don't do that. How would you like it if I started emailing you? You wouldn't like that, would you? Find out what's going on by going to our Facebook page, which really sucks, and there's really no purpose, but everybody else does it, so I have to. This is where I have to play along for business purposes, but it yields me absolutely nothing. It's New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. You'll find that on Facebook. I don't know. I have no idea why. I was told by a business manager that you have to do it, and I said, oh, what do you mean, like I have to pay you money to create a Facebook page? They said, yes, that's what you have to do. Here's the scariest part of one's life. I believe that what happens is, here's a meaning of life. Here's a meaning of life. You're put on this earth. You are given the gift of life so that later on in life you can realize that all that happened was you turned into your parents. And you're going to agree with me. If you still have a relationship with your parents, or even if they've passed, it doesn't really make any difference. My parents told me a lot of things when I was younger, and I rebelled against all of them because that's what kids do. They say to themselves, well, I'm really smarter than you are because you parents are old. I'm with it, man. I'm with the deal. So don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing at 16 years old. I've been around. I actually went to school like a couple of times this week. I know what I'm doing. Your parents would say, you know, that music you're listening to, that sucks. When I was younger, that was real music. This sucks. This just sucks, this music today. And I say, yeah, okay, whatever, Dad, whatever, whatever. He said, you know, when you get older, you're gonna understand what the world's really about. Oh, am I? Okay, yeah, we'll see about that. We'll see what happens with that. Yeah, you know, you want a bicycle and you want, you think I'm made of money? You think I'm made of money? I'm not. I have to work hard for everything. Money is doesn't grow on trees like you kids think. You can't just snap your fingers and get a bicycle. This house costs money. Oh, really, Dad? When I get older, I'm going to make tons of money, more than you made. And everything will be at my fingertips because I'm going to own a business of some sort. I will. Hey, you think it's so easy, huh? Wait till you get older. Hey, Ron. Hey, you think it's so much fun to play with kids? Wait till you get older and you find out what people are really about. What are you talking about, Dad? That sounds grumpy. Yeah, you'll see. You'll see when you get older. You like that hair? You think you're going to have hair the rest of your life on your head? What, are you crazy? You think hair is going to grow for you forever? It ain't like that, kid. It ain't like that. You're going to start losing your hair. It's going to get thin and it's going to get funky. Believe me. No, it's not, Dad. Look at my hair. This is very different than your hair. My hair is extremely healthy, and I'm going to keep it that way because I'm going to add minerals to it and all kinds of things. I will have hair forever. Oh, you think so? Wait till you get older. You see what happens. Well, I got a little bit older, and I'm starting to turn into my dad. As a matter of fact, I think I have. If I look in the mirror, I even see a little bit that I kind of actually maybe even look like him. If I hold up a picture of my dad, and I stare in the mirror and look at my face and my dad, I will start to freak out. My heart will start to palpitate just a little bit in the sense of great anxiety of doom. I'm starting to look like him a little bit. And yeah, all these minerals I put in my hair, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He was right. Do you know what kind of music I like now? I like the music that my father liked. Like two generations ago, maybe three generations ago, I find that music to be very soothing. He was right. Oh my God, he was right. And he told me that if I ever had children, that I'd understand what it's like. I said, when I raise my children, it's going to be incredible. And it was. And it is. But all the stuff he said he was going through, yeah, I did go through that. He was right. He was right on just about everything that I said will never happen to me. He was right. And I did start to get grumpy. Oddly enough, it was a year later after he told me, I got grumpy at like 18 years old, I was grumpy by then. I was very advanced for my age. I knew at 18 that everybody sucked immediately. My father said I wouldn't realize that until later in life. He was wrong about that. I realized that like immediately, almost as he was saying it. but I have, in a sense, turned into my father. My father is long gone. He passed well over a decade ago. And I guess the major thing that I would have wanted to say to him before he passed was not necessarily, I love you. None of that schmootzy, smoochy stuff. I think what I really wanted to say was, Dad, you were right.
There's a monkey in the band. The muffins are sleeping, and the tiger's in the sand. Oh no. Well, the grapes keep raining down, and everyone is eating, but another train is rolling into town.
So, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, my guest will join us, Kwame Alexander. He's with National Geographic, one of the most impressive things in the world, National Geographic, my gosh. But first, these words, and we'll be right back.
Smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats. You love your new connected technology. And the Consumer Technology Association wants to help you protect the security of your devices. First, don't use default or easy-to-guess passwords. Create unique ones and keep them safe. Next, look for and install security updates from device manufacturers. Also, have an active firewall for your home router. And consider using a professional installer to set up your new devices. Easy tips from the Consumer Technology Association to help keep your devices secure.
Wildlife poaching doesn't just happen in faraway places. It's a crime committed against countless wild animals all around you. Poachers don't care about hunting seasons, endangered species, or even the safety of other humans. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, which protects wild animals through habitat preservation and by confronting cruelty, needs your help. Learn your state's wildlife laws, so when you witness a crime against a wild animal, you can report it immediately. Help protect wildlife at wildlifelandtrust.org.
Hi, Kwame. How are you?
Hey, Ron. Good. How are you?
I'm great. Kwame Alexander is a poet, an educator, a New York Times bestselling author of 21 books. Oh, my God.
Actually, 24, but who's counting?
I guess you are. But that's, man, that's incredible. I would retire, but I guess you sound too young.
Yeah, man, I love my job, man. So no retiring here.
Well, my favorite is National Geographic, and in conjunction with them, we've got Animal Ark, which is just, just the quality that you would expect. How did you get involved with this project?
So, I had written, quite a few books using poetry as a way to get kids excited about literature and engaged with books. And National Geographic called and said, we want you to come see this exhibit called Photo Ark, which is a collection of incredible photographs that Joel Sartori has taken of endangered animals, and as a way of celebrating their diversity and their fragility. And I looked at the exhibit and was stunned and awestruck, and they said, well, how about writing some poems for children for the Asian elephant and, for the butterfly and for the giant panda cubs and all these animals that are on the verge, of extinction if we don't do anything to help protect them. And of course, I jumped at that opportunity.
That's incredible. It's great. The sensitivity that you instill in a child sets them up for the rest of their lives as to whether they're going to be sensitive to the planet and the world they live in, or whether they're kind of not, which is everybody right now in Washington, but that's besides the point. I can't think of a better foundation for understanding than when a child understands and appreciates animals and wildlife.
You know, I believe, Ron, that the mind of an adult begins in the imagination of a child.
Yeah.
And so the things that we do for children to help them become more empathetic, to feel more connected to the world, to become more human, those things that are happening now for them through their teachers, at home, in books, are the things that help them become who they're going to be. And we hope they're going to be people that are going to help, you know, save this planet, to make this world a better place.
No question about it. Now, the process that you went through, were you given photographs? What inspired you to do each individual poem?
I was given 30 photographs, and along with two co-writers, Mary Rand Hess and Deanna Nakaito, we sat down at my dining room table with a glass of wine.
Yes.
Oh, can I say wine on this show?
I do more than wine, but that's okay.
Excellent. So we sat down with our favorite drinks, and we had conversations about the animals and decided who was going to write haiku for which animal. And, of course, we chose haiku because this ancient form of Japanese poetry was so concise. It was only three lines, and it packed a real powerful punch. And then we began to write these poems, that really hopefully showcases the beauty and the splendor and of these wonderful animals.
Wow, that's great. What's next on tap for you, just on the side here?
I travel a lot, so I visit a lot of schools, sharing my books. I'm currently writing a novel, which is a prequel to the novel that I wrote called The Crossover, which won the Newbery Medal. Uh-huh. So I'm working on that now. I'm working on a TV series. So a lot of different ways to capture, hopefully, the attention of young people, inspire them and engage them to pick up a book and be moved.
Yeah. Are children more prone to connection through poetry than they are through prose?
I don't know if they're more, sort of prone to it, but I think that all children can be reached through poetry in a way that other forms of literature can't do immediately. I think because it's so concise, because it has so much white space on the page, it's not intimidating, because it takes these emotionally sort of powerful moments that are happening in our lives, in the world, and sort of makes them, it brings them to this very small and digestible level. I think because it does all that, it has the capacity to reach all children, whether they're reluctant readers or whether they're sort of avid readers. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's the surefire way to sort of get to the heart of what really matters to all of us.
Yeah. Well, what's the target group for this particular book, Animal Ark?
The publisher says 4 to 8, uh-huh. And that's because of these, beautiful pictures and photographs that Joel has taken of the sloth and the loris and the mandrill, and the haiku are very accessible for young people. I mean, my 8-year-old, she can read it on her own, obviously, and sort of understand what's going on. I like to think, Ron, that it's for ages 1 to 99, because
yeah.
We all have something we can learn from these animals, and who are really our brothers and sisters, and we got to remember that we are family.
Yeah, I don't understand the mentality of people that consider them to be prey for hunting, as opposed to them having a right to be on the planet as much as we do. I never quite got that, and I always feel a disconnection.
Again, I agree with you. It goes back to how we are raised and taught and as children.
Yeah.
And if we don't know, if we aren't given, you know, the knowledge and the wisdom that our actions matter and that we are all family, then you can't expect that when we grow up that that's going to change. We've got to do a better job, and I think that's why Animal Ark is so important, because it really celebrates the beauty and the diversity of our animal world through these amazing photographs, and it captures that.
Unfortunately, for adults, I think adults are listening to this show, and they buy books for their children, so this is apropos, but I think it, unfortunately, we've reached a time in our lives, politically, that I think we as adults have to make our voices known as well, as opposed to just let things march by in front of us. You have to really let your representative know that these matters are important to you.
Whether it's, you know, saving the Asian elephant or the clouded leopard, whether it is finding your voice and raising it to resist the things that you don't believe in, whether it's standing up for what's important to you in America right now.
Yes.
I think this, you know, this whole project is really a metaphor for how we find our voice, how we raise our voice, and how we speak out on things ultimately that are going to make this world a better place. And of course, the alternative is full of hope. Is full of hopelessness, and we don't want that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a child's reaction to these pictures and this poetry would be intriguing and educational and connecting. An adult's response would be, I've got to protect this. I've got to make sure this goes on. It's kind of a different reaction these days. Where the book's available everywhere, I assume.
Books available everywhere, in bookstores and libraries and museums, and it's out now. Animal Ark.
Animal Ark. And if we wanted to follow the life of Kwame, not in a stalking sense, how would we do that?
You can visit me at KwameAlexander.com, and all of my happenings and book tours and so forth are featured on the site.
Right. And I'll spell your first name because it's a little bit different than Bob. It's K-W...
Or Ron.
Yeah, I know. It's K-W-A-M-E. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been fun and educational, and glad we could connect.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that was fairly interesting. Actually, it was very interesting. I love animals, man. I just love them. The only animals I don't like are insects, because they're not animals to me. Those are insects. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We don't hire people to spray against lions and bears and, you know, and dogs and cats. We hire people to spray against mosquitoes and annoying little gnats and things like that, you know. Ants, uncles. Wish there was a spray for ants and uncles, I'll tell you that right now. No, I'm talking about the little carpenter ants, the ones that build things, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, yeah, I do that. I hire someone once a year to come to my house once a month and spray for mosquitoes, because mosquitoes carry deadly viruses, and that's like inviting a bunch of hookers over to your house to give you sexual diseases. But at least with that, there's some pleasure involved. But, yeah, so I hire these mosquito people. They're called the Mosquito Rangers. It's always all these cute names for them, you know. And they come over in a truck, and on the side of the truck is painted a giant mosquito, which is lovely. And they come out of the truck, they put a gas mask on or something, and then cylinders are on their back. They look like they're about to attack a village or something. And they walk around, and they spray the trees in the back of my house for mosquitoes. Because I have a lot of mosquitoes in the back of my house. They hang out there. They have a little place in the back. I have a lot of pondage in the back of my house. Pondage. And mosquitoes apparently like the pondage. So I said pondage, not bondage. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Seriously? Seriously? I love animals. I have wild turkey in my backyard. I have wild turkeys. Yeah, I do. On a nice day, I'll go into my refrigerator and pull out a flask of wild turkey, and I'll sit on my back porch and I'll just get shit-faced. And no, I do have wild turkeys in my backyard. They walk around and they gobble, gobble, gobble. They do that. And I also have, there's some deer that comes through my yard every once in a while. I'm like the deer crossing. It's lovely. I just love, and then little bunnies. It's like Bambi show here. It's just beautiful, and birds, and I just love animals, man. That's why I like you, because you're like an animal to me. You just we feed off of each other. This is getting a little uncomfortable. It's time for me to go. Join me again tomorrow. Will you do that? You gonna think about it? Oh, come on. You will? Good. I appreciate it.